part two. So starting a series, I know part of the congregational survey that we talked about, the people were very, very interested, overwhelmingly, in talking more about a relationship with God. And so I'm starting a series that has to do with building our relationship with God. And today is part two of that. And the title would be Strength in God. Relationship with God, part two, Strength in God. If you would start by turning back to 2 Corinthians 12, let's start there. You know, I think it's really interesting when we look at our children. Have you ever seen a child look up to his parents and with complete trust and just being willing to say, you know what, I trust you. And a parent, you know, if done right, gives the child a lot of strength in life. You know, it's very easy, and I've seen this, you know, in society and other places. It's something that really bothers me a lot is when parents aren't encouraging or don't give their kids strength. And I think that's something that's a very important thing to do, is to pass that along, as we heard in the sermon now, even pass along a blessing, and to give strength and not to break down. Because a child is very trusting, very vulnerable, and looks up to a parent. But when you see a child receiving strength from a parent, there's a confidence there. There is in the wrong way, but there's a natural confidence there that a child feels from that, from his parent. And it's the same way with God with us. There is a natural confidence that we can have, not in a worldly way or not in a cocky way or not in some self-aggrandizing way, but there is a confidence that when we have strength in our God, that comes from that. Let's turn over, though. Let's talk about strength today. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7 sets the tone, though, because the way we think about strength with God is not the way the world thinks about strength. The tone is set here by Paul, 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Breaking in the middle of thought, he says, "Unless I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you.'" So Paul had something that was plaguing him. You know, there's theories about what that is, whether it was his eyesight was bad, and he asked God to remove it. You know, he said, "What large letters I have written to you." You know, there's a number of theories about what that actually was, but it doesn't really matter. Because what he is saying is that he realized that there was something that was given to him that was painful, that was very difficult for him. And he pleaded with God over and over, and he said, "You know, please take this away. Can you please take this away?" But we find it here, verse 9 is the key thing. It says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." My strength, God's strength, is made perfect in our weakness, is what Paul is saying there. And so Paul goes on, like Paul, you know, typically does. He says one thing and then he goes way and says, you know, "Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." That sounds like a riddle, though, doesn't it? How could you be weak but strong? And this is a very big key that Paul is bringing out here. Because strength in God does not look like the strength of man. Strength of God does not look like the strength of man. For Paul says, "When I am weak, then I am strong." You know, it's these times when we're helpless. It's those times when, you know, and he lists a number of things here. A lot of times we avoid these things or don't like these things. Infirmities, reproaches, in need, persecution, distress, all of these things. Paul said, these weaken him physically, but he becomes stronger in Christ. So there is a riddle here that doesn't make sense, but it does when you think about it. So what we find is that when we look at strength in God, it's not going to look like the typical strength that we see in this world. A lot of times those physical illnesses, the weaknesses, the trials, the things that we experience actually make us stronger in God. And therefore, Paul is saying these are actually a blessing. We have to look at some of these things a little bit differently. You know, weakness in the flesh is not trusting in ourselves, right? It's not trusting in ourselves. It's not just the trial, but what the result of that trial is, or what the result of that infirmity or that sickness or the other things that we have, because it brings us physically down to where we can no longer trust in ourselves or rely on ourselves, and we do turn to God. We do turn to him. Let's turn to Jeremiah 17, verse 5. Jeremiah 17, verse 5. Because the idea is that that trust is not in ourselves. That strength is not in ourselves. Jeremiah 17, 5 says this. It says, "Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, whose heart departs from the Lord. For he shall be like a shrub in the desert and shall not see when good comes, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, in a salt land which is not inhabited. But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord. For he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its root by the river and will not fear when he comes. But its leaf will be green and will not be anxious in your year of drought, nor will cease from yielding fruit." You can think about that physically, but think about this spiritually. There is a trust that we have or we can choose, and that is to trust in yourself or in the strength of your flesh, the strength of you. What does that look like? Is that just lifting weights? It's not necessarily what that's talking about here. There's a strength that we have, that we assume, that we can take on, that is of ourselves. That is to say, you know, I am doing this by my power. I am doing this by me. I am doing this politically. This is what I want. I push my way. I do my stuff. It's all about the strength, your own strength, your own flesh, and your own ways, and the own ways that you do it. And it says here that you'll be like a desert if you do that. But if your trust is not in yourself, in your flesh, in your ways, in your thoughts, and everything else, then you will be like a tree planted by the rivers. So trusting in ourselves versus trusting in God is a huge thing. Turn over to Daniel 4:28. We have an example of this that is in the Bible. There's plenty of examples in the Bible. But this is a very, very specific one where God calls this out. And God shows this to a ruler. Daniel 4 and verse 28. This is talking about King Nebuchadnezzar. And it says, "All of this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. And at the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. And the king spoke, saying, 'Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?'" Can you hear this? Can you? When you read this now, you cringe, right? You almost duck. It's like there's lightning. What's going to happen here? You know, back in the day, you would probably see this guy and be very impressed. King Nebuchadnezzar. Big flashy king, probably strong, probably dynamic, probably comes in the room, dominates everything, and he's like, you know, and he's worked very hard at all of this. And he's saying it's by his mighty power he did this. In verse 31, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice from heaven said, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you, and they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses." In that very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird claws. And you see here, this man had trusted in himself. This strength was in himself. And God is saying, nope, that is not how this works. And so he drove him into as a wild animal. And like, and it says here, you know, his hair and his fingers are like bird claws. And, you know, he's just eating the grass out in the field. And all the people around him are looking at this like, what has happened here? And at the end of the time, after 7 years, verse 34, says, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the armies of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?' And at the same time, you know, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. And my counselors and nobles resorted to me, and I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praised and extolled and honored the kingdom of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he is able to put down." This is a very clear example. If you want to see what it looks like for us to trust in our own strength And this is what Nebuchadnezzar said, and he did, and God brought him down to where he stopped saying I and me and my power, and saying you and yours and his is the glory. You can see the difference there. You can see the difference there. Which one of these men is actually stronger than the other? On a physical level, you would say the king was, and people would look at him and be in awe of that. And this is one of the part of the problem, is that we look at the physical outside. We look at that for strength. We look at how somebody presents themselves and talks and comes and says. But if you want to have spiritual goggles on, put our spiritual glasses on, you have to see strength like God sees strength. It is not that person. It is not that approach. It is not about us and how we present. God's strength comes through weakness. If you want to find God's strength, you look around and you start to see where there might be troubles and hardships and weakness and not the great things. And there you'll start to find God's strength, not the other way around. It's not about dynamically joining club and speaking like this. It's not what that's about. When we find strength of God, it doesn't look like the strength of man. God's strength looks completely different. Strength also is not about power or control, not physical strength. It's not bullying other people. In fact, if you bully people, that's a sign of weakness of a person. You know, somebody who, it's a quote by Leo Rostin, it says, I learned that it is the weak who are cruel, and that gentleness is to be expected only from the strong. It's the opposite. Bullying is not strength. Bullying is weakness. Those who are strong actually show and demonstrate kindness in other things, not dominating, not control, not power over, not trying to control people. And strength is not violence either. Every single movie, I don't know about you, I love my action movies. I don't know about you. It's a great diversion to sit and watch these things as a guy. Some of them are not that great. But you know what? Every single one of those is about revenge in the guy. And he's usually got muscles. And he reaches a breaking point, and then he goes cleans up. That's the theme of pretty much every single movie, right? That's not the strength that we're talking about either. It's not Jason Statham. It's not, you know, all the people in the movies like that. That is not strength. Cain killed Abel out of anger and violence. That was not strength. And one of the things that is a problem when we look at strength is we're looking in the wrong place. We're looking at the wrong thing in other people and ourselves. For my strength is made perfect in weakness, not in the outward appearance. Turn back to 1 Samuel 9. If you remember this, when the Israel did not have a king, and they wanted a king, and who did they choose, and who was chosen, and why? And it says here, 1 Samuel 9, verse 1 and 2. This is the story of Saul, if you remember. It says, 1 Samuel 9, verse 1, it says, there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeor, the son of, etc., a mighty man of power. And he had a choice and a handsome son, whose name was Saul. And there was not a more handsome person than he among the children. Right? And it says, from the neck up, there wasn't more handsome. That's a funny phrase to me, from the neck up, he was more handsome or taller. Because everything else was ugly, I don't know. From the neck up was great. Either way, the reason this guy was chosen and people responded to the person was why? Because he looked the part. He looked the part. He was handsome. I have a handsome king. I have a tall king. He has broad shoulders. That person looks like they could fight. You know, if you think about it, this would be the perfect physical specimen that you could think of today. Think of some of the big football players, you know, that are massive and big and, you know, could be good looking and be like, wow, that person is strong. And if you remember, I won't go through the story of it, but what's the story of his life? There was not strength there at all. In fact, we come up to the place where there's David and Goliath, and who's cowering? This perfect specimen of a person that was chosen king that people looked at. And who came and had strength? That was somebody. If you think about it, who was that? David. And if we want to look at David, who was he? If you're going to look for a strong person, where do you go? Do you go to the football fields or you go out to go find somebody looking after sheep? Okay, if you think about this, this is a guy out in the fields looking after sheep, probably singing to them, you know, and all these other things. you would never look there. And so David comes trotting in as a teenager. He's probably 16, 17. And we have this big, tall, perfect specimen cowering in fear. We have this little boy who tends sheep. His best friends are sheep. And he comes in and with strength that wasn't his own, slays Goliath. Can you see the difference here? We look physically, we look externally, and that's not where God's strength is found. That's not where it's found. You and I will like to present ourselves a certain way, or maybe look to people that are a certain way, but that's not where God's strength is. God's strength is not found in the outward appearance. God's strength is found in weakness. We're looking in the wrong place. You want to be strengthened in God, find somebody who goes through something. Find somebody who is in afflictions. Find somebody who is struggling. Find somebody who has messiness in their life. And you'll find somebody who is developing their strength in God. There is a big difference between those two. So what we find, first of all, is that the strength of God does not look like the strength of men. And that God's strength comes through our weakness. It comes through our weakness. You know, when we start to look at this concept, it's important to reframe trials a bit. Because, and we'll get to this later, it's a very important part of your growth process that God works with us to, not to punish us, but to develop his strength in us. There's a huge difference between those two things that I just described there. I did something wrong, I get a trial. Versus, I'm going to help you become stronger, resilient in my strength, not your own. There's a huge difference. One of those is a blessing that comes by difficulty. The other one feels like a punishment of a dad or father just punishing a kid because they act up or not. That is the second one. The first one, I'm sorry, the one about building strength in somebody is what it is all about. Now, strength comes through our weakness. But there are also things that we can do to weaken that strength in life. There are things that we do that actually weaken this strength or break it down. Turn over to Proverbs 31, verse 3. So God's strength is different. It comes through our weakness. Not our trust in ourselves, but our weakness in ourselves. There are things, though, that we end up doing that sometimes break that down. Proverbs 31, verse 3 talks about this. Proverbs 31, right? The mother talking to the son. It says, do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. So when you read this, yes, he's talking to a king, but think of yourself as a king in training. I mean, are you going to be a kingdom of priests on this earth? We are. And you have to read these words for yourself. If you really want to think about life differently, think about this. Don't give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all afflicted. Give strong drink to him who is perishing and wine to those who are bitter of heart. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. So this lists a few things here. What are some of the ways that destroy kings, it says? If you're a king, there's ways that will destroy your strength. Proverbs in verse 3 says, don't give your strength to women is one. There's a story of King Louis the 16th of France. Many years ago, I heard this story. Talked about King Louis had been taken from his throne and imprisoned. This king was taken, imprisoned. His young son, this is not the king, but the son of the king, the prince, was taken by those who dethroned the king. So there was an uprising, and he's taken, put in jail, and his son, prince, is also. And they thought that in as much the king's son was heir to the throne, if they could destroy him morally, he would never realize the great and grand destiny that life had bestowed upon him. So they set about. They took him to a community far away, this prince, the boy. And there they exposed the lad to every filthy and vile thing that life could offer. They exposed him to foods, the richness of which would quickly make him a slave to his appetite. They exposed him. They used vile language around him constantly. They exposed him to lewd and lusting women. They exposed him to dishonor and to distrust. And he was surrounded 24 hours a day by everything that could drag a soul of a man as low as one could slip. And for over 6 months, he had this treatment done to him. But not once did the young lad buckle under the pressure. finally, after intensive temptation, they questioned him. And they said, "Why have you not submitted himself to these things? Why had you not partaken in this? These things would provide pleasure, satisfy his lust, and were desirable. And they were all his if he wanted it." And all the only thing the boy said is, "I cannot do what you ask, for I was born to be a king." I cannot do what you ask, for I was born to be a king. Do you say that? Proverbs says, don't let the things that destroy a king, don't do the things that destroy a king. Can you say, "I cannot do what you ask, for I was born to be a king"? That is a thought we need to have in our heads. I was born not because we're great, but because this helps us resist those things that take that away. What are some of the things that are called out here that take strength away? Too much drink is one. Proverbs says wine is a mocker. Strong drink is a brawler. And whoever is deceived by it is not wise. You know, you see this. We've all done it. I've done it. You see people drink, give you artificial confidence in life, right? They kind of get psyched up by having a drink. They pick fights. They're mouthy. They think they're strong. They think they're, you know, but, you know, really, to those around them, that person, if you are on the outside not drinking, that person looks weak. They don't see how they look. They don't see how quick their mouth is. They don't see how, you know, obnoxious it is. But it's an artificial courage, an artificial strength that is temporary, but it actually weakens a person. You know, or people go out to drink, and they drink to give themselves courage and do things they normally wouldn't do. You know, I can't talk to that person, guy or girl, but it gives me, you know, a little bit of, you know, once I drink this, I feel like I'm, you know, on fire, right? But they think they're more funny, more charming, etc. But when you watch a person like that, they're not. They're not, right? They're loud, they're ramrod over people, you know, they become something else that they're not. And what we find is that drink is one of those things that can take your strength away. People drink it to be strong or to feel stronger, but it does the opposite. It actually weakens, as is said there in the Proverbs. Turn to Proverbs 23:29. Just turn back a few chapters. Proverbs 23:29 is another description about too much drink. Proverbs 23:29 says, "Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Which of you have a whole bunch of things done to you, and there's no justification? You just feel like things are happening to you. Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. And the last, it bites like a serpent, and it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you'll be like one who lays down in the midst of the sea, or like the one at the top of the mast saying, 'They struck me, but I was not hurt. They beat me, but I didn't feel it. When shall I wake to have another drink?'" You know, the weakness that happens here is that you see and feel and hear and are oversensitive to things that aren't there. You say, "I've been struck, but nobody hit you. You're beating me, but you didn't feel it." That is not a strength. You're actually pulling yourself down to a weaker spot, is what's said here. You know, and it's an easy thing to do. A lot of times we drink to, you know, numb the pain, or to deal, you know, try to deal or physically suppress something that might be happening in life. But we have to learn to find our strength in God. Does this mean you never have a glass of wine? That's not what I'm saying. There's a difference of what I'm saying is that it's easy for us to divert off to physical things as a substitute for strength. The time when we're pressed to the floor, when you feel it to the nth degree, when it's the most difficult, do we divert off and take our strength to a weakness versus to our God? Remember, his strength is made perfect in our weakness. Those are the times, the places, and the moments we're brought to where our strength should actually be able to take a step forward. Instead, we divert off to the side with things like drink. I remember there was a scene in Braveheart. One of my favorite movies is Braveheart. And he was about to be tortured and put to death. I don't know if you remember this. He was about to be tortured and put to death. And a lady comes to him, his girlfriend or whoever it was, and offers them a vial of, you know, painkiller, basically, to say, you know, you're going to go through this. Why don't you take this, and, you know, we'll feel, it won't hurt as much or whatever. And you know what? He took it in his mouth for her, but then when she walked out, he spat it out. And I thought that was a very interesting scene, because it was about going through with that strength, not trying to find an out, but going through that whole thing he knew he had to do. And he wasn't going to do anything that would weaken it or not be that full thing to find his full strength in that. I thought that was a very pivotal moment when that happened. And he was tortured tremendously, you know, after that. But he didn't take the out. He didn't take the thing that helped him feel better or to temporarily feel better. So for us, it's the same. There's things that are like this that we can short circuit. We're not, they may feel fine or good or help temporarily, but they're, if you want to think about this, they're short-circuiting you building strength in God. Part of our relationship that we need to develop in life, as we'll see, is we must develop our strength in God. And that is done through weakness in the hard things of life, through them, not avoiding them, not feeling them, not skipping them, diverting them, but going through them is how we build our strength in God. Another thing is called out in that Proverbs about what is destroys kings. Let's turn back to Judges 16, verse 2. Judges 16, verse 2. Because we read this story, it's always an interesting story. But this is a clear example of somebody losing their strength because of a woman. A woman. So is this saying women are bad? This is not what this is saying. Let's read this story. Judges 16, verse 2, talk about Samson. Judges 16, verse 2, it says, when the Gazites were told Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and they lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. They were quiet all night, saying, in the morning when it is daylight, we will kill him. And Samson lay low till midnight. Then he arose at midnight, took hold of the doors of the gate of the cities and the two gateposts, pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. So this guy here, it's almost comic book strength when you read this, right? There's a gates of a city. Not only does he didn't just break the doors open, he pulls the gates and the gateposts completely up and picks them and carries them. I mean, this is, you know, if you ever see the Incredible Hulk and the Avengers, this is what this guy's like. That strong. This is almost a comic book type of a story here. That's how strong he was. Let's go to 16 verse 4. It says, and afterwards it happened that he loved the woman in the valley of Sprech, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and he said, entice him and find out where his great strength lies and by which means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. And every one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So, I mean, they're plotting to, and she's in on it. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and what you may save be bound to afflict you. And Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings, not yet dry, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Right? So she's trying to find out his strength, and he's kind of giving her lines of like, yeah, okay, woman. And so the lords of the Philistine in verse 8 brought up 7 fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, and she bound him with them. And now men were lying in wait, saying with her in the room, and she said to them, the Philistines are on you! And he broke the bowstrings in a strand, you know, like just like yarn. So the secret of his strength wasn't known. So then Delilah says to Samson, you know, you have to understand this. This is not every single relationship or every single woman. This is a woman who is trying to undermine somebody in this case. And she comes to him with, puppy dog eyes and all pouty. And is like, Samson, look, you mocked me and told me lies. Now please tell me what you may be about. You know, she's all given in a big sob story. Right? And so he said to her, well, if you bind me with new ropes that have never been used, then I shall become weak and be like other men. So the same thing happened. They said, and he just broke them, no problem. And then verse 13, Delilah says to Samson, until now you mocked me, told me lies. Tell me what may be bound with. And he says, you know, if you go 7 locks on my head into the weaver's loom, it's, you know, the same thing keeps happening. Right? And they came to capture him, and he got out, and he broke it. And then this is her again, using her womanly charms to bring down a person. Says, how can you say I love you? Right? You will love me. Will you hush not with me? Right? And so, you know, you mocked me these 3 times. You told me. You haven't told me. So she's using her charm. This is not a good relationship. Let's just say that, okay? She's trying to bring somebody down deliberately. Find the source of his strength and exploit it. And how can you love me if you keep saying these things? Right? And it came to pass, verse 16, that she pestered him daily with her words and pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death. Right? Guy's like, kill me now. Just kill me now. Right? So he finally told her. And he told her about the razor in the head. And then when Delilah saw in verse 18 that he told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines and come. Right? And they shaved him, and then they actually captured him, and they put his eyes out, and they bound him. You know, this is an interesting story, because it's a story of a man losing his strength, right? You can think of this physically, but think of this in your own life. Delilah can come in many forms. What is a woman in the Bible many times talked about? There's seductive things in this world that are calling your name, saying, what is it that you like? What is the source of your strength? Where is your weakness? And it will probe. The world is seen that way. Religions are seen that way. There are things in this world that will try to capture you. And what happened when he was captured? What happened when he succumbed to the woman, whatever form it came in, is he lost his strength. This is a story for you and I. That's why it's written here. We can lose our strength if we succumb to the, you know, don't give your strength to a woman. How does this happen today? Well, let's just talk for a second about a couple things. One of those is pornography. Do you know what? That is, I'm talking to the guys mostly, not saying that's the only people who look at it, but that is something that is a way of a Delilah woman trying to take your strength away from you. You know, let me give you a tip on this, because pornography is something, think of it as Delilah coming to you day after day after day after day after day after day, in every single form, till your soul is vexed, and you finally say, okay, whatever, I give in. It's everywhere. Everybody's doing it. So easy. Whatever it is. You know what? The pornography that you feel like gives you a boost is actually making you weak, and the Bible says like a crust of bread. Think about that. You want to talk about pornography, you are turning into a crust of bread. A crust of bread is not that respectable, strong of a thing. A crust of bread, when you have your kid's sandwich and you cut off the edges, that is what you are. It reduces your strength down to nothing. A tip on this with pornography is when you realize that you, when you're doing this, are defeating yourself. You are weakening yourself. You're taking your own strength. You can start to come out of it because you are the one. You become weak. You become a weak, weak man. Well, that is where you go. And that is what you turn to. Drop that stuff and you will start to find strength in life. You don't even realize how much you are taking away from strength and your strength in God when those things happen. It weakens you and you don't even see it. It's like drinking and you don't even see it. The same thing with pornography. Is it will take your strength down to weakness, and you are a crust of bread. So when Proverbs says, these are things that destroy kings, take that seriously. Pornography is one of those things where we divert off, and we think it feels or gives you a boost, but it actually makes you weaker and weaker. Think about that. You are taking your own you're taking your own self and making yourself weaker out of it. Now, there's another thing, too, if we look at it, that can make us weak and not trust and not have strength in our God. Turn over to Revelation 3, verse 17. Revelation 3, verse 17. Revelation 3, this is one that we don't even realize is happening. We don't even realize it's happening. But we're being made weaker. You know what? Satan says he's the one who weakens the nations. Satan has all of these things down pat. He knows how to go to a group of people, a nation, and weaken it. Revelation 3:17 says, because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. You know, one of the things that we find in our society is that our strength in God becomes less the more we have. Without even knowing it, our strength in God becomes less. Do you pray? When was the last time you prayed every day, please, please, please give me something enough to eat for today? Have you starved this week? And I'm not talking about because you're on a diet. Have you had to go hungry this week? Have you had to walk because you don't have a car or access to public transportation or something or bus money? Have you had the same pair of shoes for 6 years and have holes in them? You know, in other countries, this is a reality. Only 9% of the world owns a car. Do you know that? 43% have never made a phone call. 3 out of 10 have money in the bank. 3 out of 10 people have money in a bank. 3 out of 4 don't even have a bed. 7 out of 10 don't have the internet. Most of the people in the world don't. Almost 1 billion people every day are hungry. Are you? Are you hungry? 40% of the world only lives on $2 a day. When you think about this, and when you're in a spot like that, your trust and your strength, when you're in afflictions and all of those things, many times is stronger in God. But one of the things we have around us is so much. It's so easy to just stop and rely on that, isn't it? I don't know about you, but it's so easy once, hey, things aren't so bad. Yes, do I live paycheck to paycheck? Is it hard to pay the bills? Yes, 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 yes. But we're not in a dire straits at all. We have so much. We have so much. And it says we feel like we don't really need anything. We feel like that we're strong, don't we? Turn to Psalms 52:5. Psalms 52:5. Actually, 52 verse 7 says, here is the man who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness. I feel like this is a problem that we could easily have, or not we could, we have, is that we trust in the abundance of our riches. It's very, very difficult not to. We have so much, and it's so easy. But you know what? Sometimes when we are given those trials or those hard things, we have to see those differently as blessings. That's a blessing to be able to get that. Because it's easy for us to relax in all that we have and trust in the abundance of our riches. Our society is going to do that to us. And I think Satan slips that in there and gives us, you know, Proverbs says, don't give me too little, so I'm begging, but don't give me too much either. Right? There was a, you know what, let me just, if you think about that, that's pretty wise. Let me stay right here. I'm not, you know, I know people have said, oh, I'd love to win the lottery and have that problem. You know, I'd love to have that problem. But you know what? There's a trust that you start losing, I think, sometimes. Right? Now, there's things that we can do to weaken this strength. Alcohol. The woman. Don't give your strength to the woman. And a way that manifests itself today is pornography. Don't give your strength to the woman like that. And then we also trust in our riches. These are some of the things. There's other things that can do to weaken us. But if you start to think about these things in the term of mind-building strength with God, this is how we need to start to see some of the things that we're doing in life and things that we might do to weaken it. How do we build that? We build it. You know, another thing about strength, the last major point, is when you're building strength, it must be tested. It must be proved. It has to be tested. You know, we say we have strength in God, but yet we're really actually afraid. You're afraid of everything out there in the world. You're afraid of the unknown. You know, if I go out or if I do this or if I put my kids here, something bad might happen. I might run into something bad. I might be tempted by something. I might get beat up. I might get in a car crash if I do this. All that working hard, I might make too much money. I might make a mistake. My child might make a mistake. You know, all these things are being afraid. Proverbs says, the lazy man says, there's a lion out there. I'll be slain in the streets. Like, I'm staying in because something bad might happen out there. You know what? You have to journey out. You have to journey out. Bad things might happen for sure. You know what? Your strength has to be tested. You must journey out, and your strength has to be tested for you to grow stronger. You're not strengthened by lack of adversity in life, or lack of getting out, or lack of engaging, or fearful of all the things that might happen. You know what? Something's going to happen. Can you navigate if something happens? Let's turn back to 1 Samuel 30. There's a great story here. that is this. You have to put yourself in the shoes of these people. We always read through it and, you know, we pull out some things, but think about what was happening at the time. These are hard to deal with things. And your strength has to be found in them. So don't hold up. Don't say, you know, there's a lion out there. I'm going to stay inside. You have to venture out. 1 Samuel 30. Let's read this whole chapter. It's a good story. This is David. So this is now what happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south of Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken captive those women and those who were there, from small to great. They did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives and the Carmelite had been taken captive, all of his family. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, and every man for his sons and his daughters. Wow. They went out and they came back. Can you imagine? You could just put yourself there. You go out, you come back, and you approaching your house, and it's burned down, and your family's gone, and all of your stuff is gone. Everybody's stuff was taken, their wives, their kids, and all they had, and they were so distressed. You know, we probably say a couple things. Well, what did they do to deserve this? You know, they must have had something they did wrong, right? They must have. Or, you know, there's so many different reasons that we can think about this. Or, well, God could have stopped that. Why did he let that happen? And where is God? And, you know, they were in anguish, and all these things are going around. What did David do? How did he react? It's very, very important to notice this, because what is strength that we are strength? What would you do in this case? You got a group of people whipped up in a fury, and they're ready to kill you. David, you took us out here. God obviously was not with us. Wouldn't they say that? God's not with us. You took us over here. Now our stuff's all taken and gone. Our city's burned down, and we're going to stone you. You're not following God. What would you do in this case? Would you rally people and let's go fight them in your strength? Verse 6 at the end is the most important. Through all of this, it says, David strengthened himself in his Lord. He stopped. He did not physically come across as, here's, I am my strength, and yes, men, and let's get all rallied. David stopped, and he strengthened himself in his Lord, is what he did. He stopped, and he prayed, and he calmed himself. And then David said in verse 7 to the priest, bring me the ephod here. And they brought it, and David inquired of the Lord. He said, you know what, God, what is your will? Shall I pursue this troop, and shall I overtake him? And he answered, he said, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them without fail. Recover all. So David went. He and his 600 men were with him, and he came to, you know, where they stayed. And David pursued, he and 400 men. For 200 had stayed behind, who were so weary that they could not cross Brook Besor. And they found an Egyptian in the field, right? And they talked to him. They said, you know where it is? And he says, yes, I do. And then he says, can you take me to this troop in verse 15? And he says, yes, don't kill me, but I'll take you to the troop. In verse 16, when they brought him down, there they were spread over the land, eating and drinking, dancing because of all the spoils. And in verse 17, David attacked them from twilight into the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. And David recovered all the Amalekites had carried away. And David rescued his two wives. And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoils, or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. Then David took all the flocks and herds, you know, and said, this is David's spoil. Right? And they came back to the men who were 200 who'd stay behind. And some people said, they shouldn't get anything. David says, nope, we all get equal. Don't worry about that. And because God, you know why? Because in verse 23, my brethren, you should not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hands the troops that came against us. Right? David understood this. When you are faced with something like this, it's very easy to doubt. Do you know what? David and all of Israel's strength was tested here. Do you see that sometimes when things happen to you, it's not because it's a punishment or some trial to bring you down? God is testing your strength. God is trying to stretch your strength. God is trying to say, will you rely on me? Or are you going to resort back to, this is so difficult, I'm over here destroying myself with drink and pornography and everything else? Or am I going to face that thing and am I going to move forward? David and his men had to face that. When David strengthened himself, he did it in the Lord. Guess what they recovered? All of it. This wasn't just, half of it or a third of it. Every single piece of it. You know why? Because when you have strength in God, that's the outcome of it. Not our power, not our fired upness, not our let's go get them. Strength in God and resolving and having that. The outcome is one that is amazing in this life. But you're going to be tested. That's what this says. You have to face that. You have to go out. Journey out and be tested. Your strength is going to have to be tested. Think of a trial that way. Think of it that way. Man, I don't like being tested this way, and I'm going to be stretched. But God is trying to develop that strength in you. Don't divert off to something that weakens that strength. Go through it. See that with God. You know, we have to stop. It's a very rudimentary way of thinking that every time we do something well, God just blesses us. Every time we do something wrong, God punishes us. It's very rudimentary. What tells us that? The book of Job is one thing that tells us that. There's something far greater God's doing with us. It's a relationship and a strength and other things that God is doing us. You know, if we think that if we do well, we won't have trials, read your Bible. You're not reading your Bible if that's what you think. There's people that did great things in the Bible and had the horrific times in their lives. It's not about just that. Read your Bible. Job, God corrects the son he loves. Rejoice in the trials. Paul, maybe things don't turn out like you want. But we have to stop just thinking that. I mean, if you think about it, it's almost like we think we must be obeying God so well that he can't help but bless us. And God and Christ are sitting up there like, oh man, we want to help test this guy, and maybe we'll give him a trial. Oh, no, we can't this week because he's still doing so well. Shoot, we'll have to wait till next week to see if he messes up. You know, if you think about it, this is not what's going on. God is sitting up there orchestrating your faith, building strength in you. And sorry, it doesn't have to do with just what you think. Trust in God for this. He's the author and the finisher of your faith, your strength in him. This is something that is built through these hard things. These hard things are what build that strength. You know, David prayed in the Psalms, for God, you're my strength. Why do you cast me off? Why do I go mourning? It might take a long time. David recognized God with his strength. He might make you wait. It might be difficult. It might be hard. But those are the things that test your strength and build it and help it to grow. Not a punishment. If we look around at other people and say, well, you know what, I don't have a trial because I'm doing so well. We say this in our brains. We don't say this out loud. We actually say, I know we say this. I used to think this all the time. Must be doing pretty well because, you know, I don't have all these big issues. Now I have big issues. I think, oh, wow. But then I think, you know, there's something more to all of this. And there is. So we look for strength in the wrong places. Where there's adversity or affliction or hardship. This is where God's working strength. It's not just in a speaking club where we put our hands up and we project our voices and all this other stuff. That's not what it is. It's in weakness. My weakness. Our weakness. So God's strength is made perfect in weakness. And God had to, and David had to wait many times and be patient. Right? It's about a relationship. And we want to think about this. We always talk about ourselves and what we do and what we keep. But God talks about a relationship and what he's building in you and what he's developing in you. And strength is one of those things that he is interested in developing in us. It doesn't look like world strength. It looks like weakness at times physically. Why is this important? Psalms 91 verse 1. Let's just read another scripture here. Just two scriptures and we'll finish. Psalms 91 verse 1. We have to build this strength now. We have to build the strength now because there will come a time where strength in our God is going to be so required. Trust me. And if you haven't built it like he built strength, just read this. Psalms 91, verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And I will say of the Lord, he's my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I will trust. There's a strength statements, right? That's the one that's my strength. Because surely he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day. Now, this is in the end times. We're getting to a place where terror is going to be all around. And the arrow that flies in the day, we're not all war-torn here yet. We're not all self-destructed here in this country yet. We're still relatively in a good spot, but it's coming. And it will be around you. I don't know about you, but it's like, hey, can I build a compound that's way out in the middle of nowhere and underground? And, you know, things are going to happen around us. And this tells us that if you make God your strength, what happens? It says, you won't be afraid of the terror. In 6, nor the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor the destruction that lay waste at noonday. 1,000 people may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand. Chemical warfare, whatever it is, war, people might be dropping around you, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look, and shall see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you, to keep you in all your ways. In their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You should tread on the lion, the cobra, the young lion, the serpent, you shall trample underfoot. If we have been learning to have and make God our strength, it's going to be tested one day again. These things will happen, and we have to have found our strength and our refuge in our God, not in ourselves, not in our backup plans, but in our God. And people may fall around you, but it won't come near you. Very, very important. And one of the last things, let's turn back to Daniel 11, verse 32, because we're talking about the end times. There is a point, as we've talked about in trumpets, that God seals his people and protects them, but there's, you know, when the day of the Lord happens, safety. But there's times before that where the horses ride and things happen. And he even talks about some people being beheaded for his namesake. There's things that will happen. To navigate those things, we have to learn to find our strength in God, embrace the weakness and the hardships that we go through as building that strength in our God. And what we find here, Daniel 11:32 tells us what will happen. It says, those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God, what does know their God mean? That's a relationship. People who know, I know this God, my God, shall be strong and carry out great exploits. And those are the people who understand shall instruct many, and yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. There will be a mix of things that happen to people. But those who have a relationship, like David in the field, who knew his God, and Goliath comes, can with confidence, not in his ability, but in his God, shall be strong and do great exploits. But only those who have built a relationship, who can see that God's strength is made perfect in your weakness, and that we embrace that weakness, we go through that weakness, and we don't hide, we go out and let it be tested and be strengthened and stronger. When we go through that in life, and when the hardest times come, it doesn't matter because we know our God. You have that strength in him. The things won't fall. They won't befall you. They will fall all around you. And there'll be great exploits done, but only if you learn this type of strength in God, not our own strength.